you're on with the Motormouths.
Yeah, this is Tom Carter calling in.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hi, Tom.
You're a little early. How you been?
Oh, just fine, thanks.
Okay, so we're going to take a break. We'll take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk to you. How's that sound? So just hold on one sec. Let's play some music here. All right, we got Tom Carter on.
Excellent. Very good.
We're going to come back with Tom Carter, the author of Hemi in a Barn.
And Cobra in the Barn.
And Cobra in a Barn. So hold on one sec, Tom. Let's just do this, and we'll be right back here at Motormouth Radio. So keep it where you got it. Hold on a second, Tom.
Had a nice long intro for you.
Dear Mom and Dad, one thing I've learned in the Army is that when you're lucky enough to get a little time off, you should put it to good use. So I'm taking a moment to write and tell you that I'm fine and doing well. We have good days and bad days over here. We try to remember the good ones and get through the bad ones as best we can. Mostly we have each other, and that's what keeps us going. That and the pride of our commitment to getting the job done, whatever it takes. I miss you all very much and can't wait to get back to life as usual. Please tell everybody hello for me and that I'll be home soon. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. You can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. People just like you. To find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Let the Motormouths help you with all of your car questions at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motormouth Radio. We are taking those calls, 516-572-7440. But before we take those calls, we're going to talk to Tom Carter.
Absolutely.
How are you, Tom?
How you doing?
Doing well, doing
great,
well.
Tom.
Tell us a little bit about the book, Hemi in a Barn and Cobra in a Barn. I mean, like, what prompted you to write really a fascinating piece of literature, if you ask me?
Well, you know, it all started out on Long Island for me when I was a kid. I mean, I'd be riding the bus home from school. I went to Station School District out in Ronkonkoma, and I'd keep notes of where I saw old cars in people's backyards. And then that weekend, I'd get on my bicycle and go and ride and find the cars. And, you know, now I'm 54 years old, and I kind of do the same thing. I'm not riding a bus anymore.
Right. That's a great idea. I mean, we've all done that as kids, and even now we do it, but I never had the wherewithal at that age to write stuff down.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, I was never really maybe as fastidious about it, but, the thing I liked about it, I had read Hemi in the Barn, and right off the bat, you mentioned Connecting Highways, Racing on Connecting Highways.
Yeah.
And we have another fellow, Joe Oldham, we want to get on that wrote a book. It's all about New York and Long Island street racing, mm-hmm. So I love when things interconnect with us, but...
What did you find?
Oldham wrote a book on that, no kidding.
Yeah.
What
Confessions of a test car.
Muscle car.
Test driver,
test driver.
Right.
Yes. So
right.
What, when you were a kid, what did you find that literally sparked this interest? What were some things that stood out?
Well, I got to tell you, I used to watch Leave It to Beaver, and
who didn't?
Yeah,
one of Wally's friends was named Lumpy, and Lumpy drove a 1940 Ford convertible, which I really fell in love with. So I was visiting a friend out in Rocky Point, and I saw behind Charlie's Welding Shop on 25A there was a 40 Ford convertible, so I bought it for $25. I was 14.
Wow.
And I had it scoot around with it for a while, never got it really running. But I wound up selling the mirror for $75. And wait a minute, there's something going on here. I bought it for $25, sold the mirror for $75. But then the next car is a 1939 Ford Woody Wagon, which I found in Brentwood.
Wow.
I was 15, and I still have that car.
This is a great story. I did read that. And, of course, you were a lot more successful than Lumpy Rutherford ever was. But, yeah, the story with that Woody, tell us about that, because that went out of the country.
That went out of the country. I was with a friend, Xavier Lucena. We went to Seton Hall High School together, and we were walking across the schoolyard. And I said, look at that over there. And we're looking through the fence in the schoolyard, and the other side of the fence was a barn at a house, and there was a Woody there. So we run over the fence. Oh, my gosh. We ran around the other side, knocked on the door, and, yeah, it was for sale. And so I went back with my father that night, and it was $300. Well, I didn't have $300, and my father didn't have $300, but a woman that I did work for in Center Reach, she used to I used to do lawn mowing and waxing her car and stuff. She loaned me the $300 and I worked it off all summer.
Wow.
And I got this Woody. And so I had it for a few years. I needed to sell it for college money. Sold it 4 years later after I bought it. And 26 years after that, I bought it back again.
Holy
yeah.
I sold to a guy in Puerto Rico, and I bought it back from a guy in Puerto Rico 2 owners later. But I've got that car still. Mm-hmm. And it's,
man, that's great.
It's Tom, how did you stumble back on the car?
It's great.
I mean,
I started to write for Road and Track magazine, and the editor at the time was Tom Bryant, and he owned a Woody. He said, you know, there's a club called the National Woody Club. And I said, man, I'd love to own a Woody again. I used to have one. So I joined the club, and then the roster came for the membership roster, and my wife called me and said, guess what? There are 2 owners in Puerto Rico that have 39 Ford Woody. So by that evening, I found my old car.
Holy. I found it interesting that your wife read the roster.
Yeah, exactly.
She's cool, yeah.
The other thing I want to say, Tom, is that story would probably never work today, just for the fact that around here, at least, I don't see kids cutting lawns anymore.
You're right.
I got to do my own because I can't get a kid to do it. So those were the days.
You have to wonder, like, you know, I have a 17-year-old son. When he gets to be old enough to hunt down cars, is he going to be looking, like, for old Chrysler K cars?
Yeah. Honda Civics.
Well, he is old enough now, 17, sure. He's well into the prime for that.
Sure.
Yeah, he's got a Berkeley's restoring. He's got some cool cars.
Oh, nice. You know, Tom, one of the pieces, one of the snippets I got out of your book that I thought was priceless was you had said the best cars to buy are the ones that aren't for sale.
Right.
What does that mean?
Yeah, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, you know, if somebody has a car advertised or has a car on their front lawn with a for sale sign, they've already gone through the research of what is it worth. They've asked their friends or whatever, and they kind of have a feel of market value. But if you could hit somebody when you're not prepared to sell a car, and you know, say, how much is that car in your backyard? Oh, you want that thing? And the negotiation would be quick and easy and relatively inexpensive.
Right, unless the guy says, well, let me get back to you on it.
Right.
And then does some research. But, yeah, you want to hit him quick, hit him fast, and get the hell out of there.
Well, see, I'm in a position like that right now. There's a guy from Long Island originally named Briggs Cunningham, who was a famous race driver.
Sure is.
His own cars at Le Mans, built his own cars. Well, to build cars to race at Le Mans, you had to build street versions of it so they could become homologated.
Correct.
He built 23 street versions, 20 coupes and 3 roadsters of his Hemi-powered sports car.
Okay.
And everyone in the world has known about it except the one I just found. It's been hidden for 40 years.
And wow.
We're kind of going through the dance right now of evaluating it and whatever. But, man, that's my dream car.
Wow. Well, I got to say, you also had wrote about the 63 Abarth Monomelee coupe that you found on Long Island.
Yep. I remember that car when I was a kid. A doctor had it in Smithtown, or Neskonset. I went to visit my mother-in-law a couple of years ago, and I'm a runner, so I go out running. And I say, when you look for cars, driving around in a car is okay, but riding a bike is better, and running is even better.
You really
go to slow speed and look much more carefully if you're running. So I run past this house. I said, this guy had cool cars here, but, man, that was 30 years ago. It couldn't be. And as I go running past, I see an engine hoist in the garage, and I said, I can't believe it. So I knocked on a door, and a woman answered, and I said, does a car person live here? I said, does a car guy live here? She says, no, a car person lives here. My husband died, but I still have all his cars. And he bought this, you know, Fiat Monomelee new as a medical student, drove it from the Bronx to college every day.
Right.
And, you know, had it, and when he died, I have that car.
That's phenomenal. In fact, I have a picture of it right here. Here it is, Chris.
You have a picture of it. Good. You're showing it to the viewers.
Yeah, well,
good
idea. You know, I was going to say, unlike that, that's great advice, and I wanted to touch later on your 20 tips for finding cars, but it's a great tip to run, walk, or bicycle. Unlike Chris and I, we're usually lurking in people's backyards with black clothes on.
Right, behind bushes.
Yeah, like in ski caps.
No, you don't want that. I really thought about it like an ultralight because
you
know, when you're on the road, you can only see as far as your eye can let you see,
through
bushes or whatever. But if you're on an ultralight, you can see in people's backyards. Man,
That's got to be great, especially out in like California, somewhere where there's some, well, not, I mean rural California, where there was some real estate where you could actually, you know, fly over barns.
Right.
I mean, over here, you're going to see, you know, swimming pool, shed, you know.
Right, lawn.
The topography of Long Island is pretty much the same.
You know, the thing is, a car that's been sitting outside, you know, if it's been outside for any number of years, especially a northern car or something, it's probably not worth...
It's toast.
You know, it's probably pretty rusty, salt on the roads or whatever, but so the better cars are indoors, and the secret becomes, how do you discover cars that are indoors?
Yes.
Legally see, and you know, there's a way to do that, and that's make friends with local policemen,
right?
Make friends with landscapers, UPS and FedEx delivery people, gas meter readers
people
that can go on private property legally,
exactly,
are the ones that really have the key to the Golden Gate.
Well, you have a story in your book about a gas reader or a gas delivery man who found a car just like that.
And a cobra.
That's phenomenal. That's something that we all can't do. There was another little clip where you said a cheeseburger and fries led to a 67 GT500 that was a Dead Nuts original car. What?
I have that car still, 32,000 miles, original owner.
Tell us a little bit about that. It's gripping.
Well, you know, I had known this guy because I moved from Long Island down to Charlotte to become involved in NASCAR about 25 years ago. So, you know, he had been involved in NASCAR racing through he and his son, and I kind of knew him. And I knew he had this Shelby in his backyard. He told me he had a Shelby in his backyard, but he didn't really want me to see it. But he had a little luncheonette in a town called Lincolnton, and I'd go there once in a while and have pancakes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we became friends. His name was Bob Ramsour. And then I wrote this book called, I wrote a history of the Holman and Moody racing team in the 60s. And I went in there one day and gave him a copy of the book. And he, like, it was a very special edition with, like, Dan Gurney's signature, all this stuff. I gave him this copy, and he said, oh, man, he's looking through it, and he's showing other customers. And he said, what are you doing after breakfast? I said, well, I'm probably going to work. He said, why don't you come with me, and I'll show you that Shelby. And, you know, within a week, I owned the car. And the deal was that... You know, all I had to do was offer him a fair price for the car.
Right.
Like, a lot of people knew about this car. Lots of people knew about it for 20 years. But they wanted to lowball him for like $5,000 or $10,000.
Sure.
And you know what? He said, what do you offer me for the car? And he was waiting for a lowball.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, $65,000.
Wow.
He said, you just bought yourself a car.
Yeah.
Well, he's happy, and I'm thrilled because the car's worth twice that.
Sure.
When he asked you to come over and look at it.
So I got this Shelby. It's been featured on television. It's been featured on Hemmings Motor News on the front cover of Hemmings. And it's in a book now called Survivors.
Just how original is that car, Tom?
Down to the points.
Yeah.
Holy.
I pulled the original points out of it because they were so burned, but they were original points. They have factory heater hoses, all the clamps, the mufflers, you know, everything. It's a GT500 automatic.
Right.
2.4 barrels. The paint's peeling. It's lime gold.
Okay.
And the paint's peeling, so like the fiberglass hood and the fiberglass trunk, you know, there's a lot of peeling paint. It's down to the black gel coat.
Yeah.
But, man, people love it.
You
bring it to the Shelby meet, and they just freak out.
Yeah, let me ask you, when
and,
he...
And I just for a goof, I put a clothes hanger for a radio.
Excellent.
That's
awesome. When he asked you if you wanted to come over and look at that car, did you feel like Dustin Hoffman had just been asked by Mrs. Robinson to come upstairs to check the plumbing or something? I mean, because that's how I would feel. I'd be like,
the tingle.
Yeah.
I'm just getting tingled just thinking about just listening to Tom tell the story.
I know.
Wow.
This is a 67, and it's got the wide headlights in the front.
Right.
But so this, just 6 months ago, down here at Charlotte, I found another Shelby. Guy says to me, there's a Shelby for sale at the Speedway at Auto Fair. It's your car. I said, no, my car's not for sale. He said, well, there's a car just like yours. So I go down there, and son of a gun, there's a 67 lime gold peeling paint, but it's a GT350 instead of a 500.
Okay.
And it had factory air and a 4-speed. And this other one, you know, there's an automatic and different wheels, but it... I had to buy it. I said, I have to buy this car.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a match set of barn find 67 green Shelby.
Wow.
Small block, one big block.
Oh, that's my God.
Phenomenal. You know, there was something else in your book that you touched on, that a car that's so mundane that most people never even paid attention to it, although if they were in the know, they did. And I actually owned one. It's a Datsun 510.
Okay.
which was very popular in the racing circuits.
Sure, in the early 70s.
And
I found mine on Sunrise Highway in Bayshore behind a gas station, probably in 1975 or 76, paid $250 for it. I had needed some work. I built the engine up, and I started my racing at Bridgehampton with that car. Right. Autocrossed it at Floyd Bend Field, Nassau Beach, all those places, and mm-hmm. then raced it at Bridgehampton, Lime Rock, Briar, Pocono. And I sold that car when I moved south. And again, a quarter of a century later, a guy calls me up and says, I got your old car in my backyard. It's rusting away, but if you want it, you can have it.
How do you know that it was
my feedback?
How do you know that it was yours, Tom?
Yeah.
Well, same color, same stripes, and
No. How did you know?
As a catch can on the firewall, I used a Foster's beer can.
Right. No, I understand how you knew, but how did he know that it was yours to get in touch with you?
Right.
I sold to a friend, and he gave it to a friend of his.
Gotcha.
And so that guy, you know, he took it, he bought it from him, and never did anything with it. And he called his friend up and says, "Whoever, you know, where's Tom Cottle live these days?" And he gave him my number. He said, "You can come and have the car." So it needs a full restoration.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. But, you know, because those cars rotted out pretty bad. Sure. But you know, there are such cool stories. My favorite story is in the first book, Cove in the Barn.
Yeah.
Where a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Car crazy kid like we all were, and he's riding his bike, and he looks at a barn, and this is in, I think it's in Ohio.
And in Ohio,
he's
Indiana.
A 1932 Ford Roadster pickup in there.
Okay.
And that's like rare. Mm-hmm. Ford only built 400 1932 Ford Roadster pickups.
Okay.
Rare. Every hot rodder in the world wanted that thing. And this is 1949. He knocks on the door, and the farmer says, "Well, nah, I don't want to sell it. I think I'm going to fix it up." And he goes back in 1950 and knocks on the door, and "Nah, I don't think I want to sell it." And he goes back, you know, every year, goes to college, comes back, you know, knocks on the door, and the farmer says, "Hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a year, you know." Well, then one day he goes and knocks on the door, and the farmer doesn't answer, but a younger guy does, and the farmer died, and the farmer told his son, who answered the door, he said, "You know, this guy's going to come here. I'd like him to have the truck." So this guy, who discovered the truck at 12 years old, owned it when he was 64 years old.
64,
he
right.
went back every year?
That's determination.
Holy cats.
I mean, you know, there are incredible stories. Stories about smuggling cars out of Russia during the Cold War.
Yeah.
Having to pay off KGB agents and stuff.
Sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, and they were very...
I've just heard about a car in Iran. It was owned by the Shah, and it was a Mercedes-Benz Speed Record car, and guys are trying to figure out how to get that thing out of Iran without getting killed.
Yeah, I believe it. Oh, my God. Tom, we're going to take a break, but can we keep you on?
Sure.
Oh, awesome.
Right, hang with us.
Yeah, definitely. Hang with us. We have Tom Cotter here, the author of Hemi in a Barn and Cobra in a Barn. We got a lot more stories to talk to Tom about right here at Motormouth Radio. That's Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. More on the way. Keep it where you got it.
Got a car question? Give the Motormouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
You have a short in your horn.
Motormouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Mira, otro aviso del cirujano general de los Estados Unidos.
Yo fumaba hasta que dijo que el cigarrillo me estaba matando.
Tenías razón, ¿no?
Pues ya no fumo. ¿Y ahora qué tengo que dejar?
Me escucha, el cirujano general de los Estados Unidos recomienda que se haga una prueba de radón en los hogares.
¿Qué radón?
Aquí dice que es un gas invisible que se filtra en las casas desde el suelo y que puede causar cáncer del pulmón como los cigarrillos.
¿Cómo sé si lo hay?
Tienes que hacer una prueba de radón en tu casa. Llama al 1-866-528-3187. Si tienes un problema, te dirán cómo solucionarlo.
¿Me prestas tu celular?
De esta estación y el US EPA.
Have a question about your car or someone else's car? Then give the Motormouths a call, 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motormouth Radio. We are taking those calls, 516-572-7440, here on a Thursday afternoon with Tom Cotter, author of Hemi in a Barn and Cobra in a Barn. And Tom, you said that there was another book coming out on the way?
I finished it yesterday, man. You know, it took a year, it finished yesterday, called The Vincent in the Barn. The Vincent in the Barn, about the Vincent Black Shadow motorcycle. But it's a book about motorcycle barn finds. Indians and Harleys and Clevelands and Vincents and even Honda Dreams. A little bit of everything. Really cool stories about, you know, there are a lot more motorcycles out there than there are cars because they're easy to store.
You just stick them in the corner.
You can put six of them in the basement, six in the garage, yeah, wherever. And people, you know, they go off to college and forget about it, and those things are still sitting around.
I got to tell you, Tom, I have one of my friends. He's kind of become the unofficial collector of single overhead cam Honda 750s in this area. And he literally has about 10 or 12 of them, in some complete and some in pieces, in his garage in Queens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even got one. Someone threw one to me a couple of years ago and said, hey, do you want this thing? It had been sitting in a guy's backyard. He had an incident where he, like most people, he just saw something that happened in his life. He lost a friend that said, I'm not riding anymore, and left the bike. So I got it. It was derelict. I didn't want it, but I called my buddy Neil and said, listen, if you want this thing, it's yours for what I get it for. It was like $200. Yeah. And I said, just come pick it up. It's in my driveway. Come get it out of here. And he did. Yeah, you know, so it just passed. Now he has it in his garage.
Wow!
But so what have your experiences been with motorcycles over the years?
Well, not much. Like I gotta say, I'm a car guy. Mm-hmm. I've always admired bikes, but I have to tell you that spending a year writing this book, I've learned and appreciate bikes so much that now I want to own one. I mean, I want to get an old Indian or something. You know, these things are, they're amazing, and they're out there. In fact, one of the guys I met with from the Barber Museum out in Birmingham, Alabama, so it's probably the best motorcycle museum in the world, he said that small towns still have motorcycles that are forgotten in people's mm-hmm. basements or whatever. And if you take out an ad, a wanted ad, in the classified section of a small town newspaper, one that's probably read by older people, and just say, you know, help me relive my youth, please sell me the old motorcycle in your garage, he says you won't believe the response you get. So I'm going to try that.
That sounds like tip number 21.
It sure is.
Now, there are tips that you state in your book. Would you like to share some of them with us?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Barn finding, you know, you don't need a PhD or anything like that. It's anybody can do it. And, you know, you might just score a car that can pay off your mortgage or buy a bigger house, or you just have a cool car in your garage. But go on weekends.
That's a great one.
Best time to go car hunting is when people are doing yard work. So in the springtime, real good time, because garage doors are open, they're getting the spreader out, and they've got rakes and stuff, and you can see inside garages where normally you can't see.
Yeah, right. I've seen that right in my own town here, Tom, where guys will, like you said in the book, they'll open the door to get the rakes or the lawnmower out, and there's a car, maybe with a cover over it, maybe not, and the lawn furniture's piled on top of it,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you identify it right away. I should start making a map of those things.
Oh, yeah. So that's one thing. Another thing, like I said, make friends with people that can go on private property legally. You know, one of the things I have in the book is that you can go back home again. That's
tip number one.
Let's say you grew up in, you know, wherever you grew up.
Right.
I grew up in Ronkonkoma, and I went back 30 years later. I still remember where car guys lived, and there's a good chance those people still live there. Just go back, and you know, even if they don't live there, it might still be some, you know, parts in the backyard. Yeah. But you can go back home again. The people that were car nuts 30 years ago are car nuts today still.
You know, Tom, let me throw something out to you. I bought a 65 GTO in 1975 that I still have. And
Tom, let me tell you, you probably have a picture of it because it's in a garage. It's like a sarcophagus because the car is just sitting there. It looks like it's been sitting there for 20 years.
It's kind of like what you said in your book. You know, people who read the book have their own garage finds, and this is mine because it's been off the road. It's registered and insured, but I haven't driven it in over 20 years. It's just sitting in a garage.
Mm-hmm.
But I got it from, I thought the town was Middle Island at the time, from what I remember. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the registration the other day. I have the original registration from when I bought it, and it was listed as being in Lake Ronkonkoma, on Lake Avenue in Lake Ronkonkoma.
No kidding. Who is the owner, Dan?
You know, I don't remember the name. You know what? I'll email you the information, because it would be cool if you knew who this person was. You know,
I got a high school with him or something.
The 65 that I got, and there was also a 67 that my boss at the time had bought. He put a package deal together. I got my car for $75.
Oh, man.
It wasn't running. He got the 67 that was running for, I think, what, 100 a quarter, or maybe two and a quarter, something like
right.
that.
Right.
65 is a nicer car to me.
I like it. Yeah, that's why I took it. But I'll send you the info.
Another thing is, you know, a tip that I always do is go down dead-end streets.
Right.
Like, you know, when you see a road that says dead-end or no outlet, most people say, oh, screw it, I don't want to have to make a three-point turn at the end.
And so
90% of the people we're just cruising around, we'll never go down that road. Mm. That's where the cars still are.
You made me shiver when I read that, because I live on a dead end. And I know, like, damn, they're going to be checking out my stuff now. But yeah, and, you know, Tom, your other tip was, you had a tip, look behind yourself.
What does that mean?
It's brilliant. Explain that, please.
Yeah.
Well, if you drive, I mean, this is where if you're driving with your wife in the car, she's screaming at you to look straight ahead.
Because, that's all the time.
You know, because you're looking this way, that way, this way. And, you know, you can see kind of the, at an angle where you're going to, but it's hard to see at an angle where you're coming from. But you just got to, you know, you got to go, you got to look left and right and a little bit beyond that.
Right, because
behind the garage you just passed.
Yeah, because you had said you may go down a street the same way all the time and never come back the other way. And right. That's when you miss those things. That's right. Didn't you find a car, like, literally next door to your house like that, a car that you had passed?
When I got my Cobra, I have a 289 Cobra. I drove in from California, and I wrote a story for Road and Track magazine about it. And my next-door neighbor, who I never met, he lives a half mile from me because, you know, we are in the country. And he owns a farm, and he calls me up and says, "You don't know me, but I'm Hugh Barger, and I own Barger Farms." I said, "Oh, how you doing?" And he says, "I've got an AC Greyhound in my barn, and I, you know, I'd like to see your Cobra sometime." Well, so here, I'm talking in the country in North Carolina, a half mile from where I live. My next-door neighbor has a car that came off the same obscure assembly line in England as my Cobra did.
Wow.
Two years earlier.
And he wants to see your car.
He wants to see my car, yeah. Well, yeah, you know, AC Greyhound, it's like a little, it's an aluminum sedan. It's not the prettiest car. I had a Bristol double cam motor in it, six cylinder.
Okay.
But, you know, he's always been intrigued with Cobras, but his father bought him this when he went to graduate school, and when he could no longer get parts for it, he just put it in the garage, and it's been there for 40 years.
Yeah. Wow.
It's still there. I've been past this place for a quarter of a century.
Right.
My God.
And there was a picture in the book where you showed the view that you had seen. You said you couldn't see much more than the nose of a tractor by this barn. And like you said, you go by it every day, and you don't know what's in there.
You ride down the road, and you say to yourself, "I wonder what's inside there." And, there's nothing inside there. Well, son of a gun, way before I lived at this house, I dreamed about something being in that garage, and there turned out to be something.
There
in
you
garage.
Go.
So, Tom, what was the most obscure thing that led you to a car, like, that you saw visually? Like, did you see, like, an antenna or just a mirror or something, like
a Motor Mouth Radio bumper sticker or something?
Well, that's obscure.
Yeah, that's very obscure.
When I lived in Bethpage, I remember I told my wife, you know, like, I'll be out Saturday. You know, I get on my bicycle, and I just say, "I'm not going to be home until I find a car that I didn't know about." And I'd be gone for all day. And, you know, some guy would be on a Saturday, and he'd be working on his yard, and there'd be a pile of crap in the garage. The door's open. You can look at his lawn chairs and sleds and bicycles. And I saw, I can't believe it, I saw the taillight lens to, like, a 51 Jaguar XK120. Just a lens. Just a tiny round lens. Because the car was covered with a canvas cover, and they had all this crap on top of it. And he said, and I'm riding by, and he's working in the yard. I said, "Is that a Jaguar you got in there?" He said, "How did you know?" I said, "Well, I could see the taillight." Said, "You got to be kidding me."
Well, that's it. They don't realize who they're dealing with.
Yeah, the only reason why I ask is because I have that talent as well. I mean, I can't remember when trash day is, but I can get, you can hand me a part to a car, and I'll 99% of the time know exactly what part it is, and or where, or give me like a little obscure picture of a vehicle, and I'll know what kind of car it is. I mean, and so that's why I'm asking. It's like I'm built for this. I've just never done it before.
Well, I don't know how you are at remembering people's names, but they say, and this has been studied scientifically, that the greater your knowledge of things mechanical, like a car, of little details and the year and the model and all those intricacies that you know about, the better you know those things, the harder it is for you to remember people's names.
That's me.
Yep.
I got I'll get faces and voices. I remember our callers when they call, but I can't remember the, you know, a name.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's some kind of a defect.
Tom, I'm lucky if I remember Ray's name.
Who?
Who?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's something. You know, you had another thing. Speaking of things of the mind, you mentioned that use reverse psychology and ask if people want to buy parts for their car. Get into that. That's great.
That's a blessing. You know, if you see a car or a motorcycle or a truck or whatever that's of interest to you, and you know, for 20 years, people have been knocking on this guy's door, you know, "No, it's not for sale. I'm going to fix it. Get out of here." Well, if you knock on a door and say, do you need any parts for that? Because I've got some parts for that 1944 or that, you know, Plymouth Roadrunner or whatever.
Even if you don't,
it starts this conversation off in a different direction. Like, you want to sell him something.
It's like a flanking maneuver.
Exactly. Mm. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what Sigmund Freud would say about this, but, you know, what the heck, it works.
Very interesting, Tom. Very interesting.
Oh, my God. No,
one of the places that, and actually Jay Leno turned me on to this, is that you can hunt for cars in New York City. And, like, how could that be?
The parking garages.
Public parking garages.
Oh, yeah.
That, and apartment house garages that, you know, wealthy people park cars and just don't use them anymore. And so Leno got this Duesenberg that had been parked in the public parking garage of Herald Square in Manhattan. A guy who was heir to the Macy's family parked the Duesenberg there for 77 years.
Wow.
And he was way behind on his payments, and so Leno came along and paid the parking fees, like $85,000, and he got the car, and now the family of that guy is suing him because they're saying that, you know, he didn't deserve to buy the car, and they want $1.5 million. And it's really odd because Leno gave me all the, if you read the Hemi in the Barn, Leno gave me the whole scoop on the thing, and they're using that, my book in court, saying, look, you tried to fraud.
Also, I got to tell you, Tom, one of our friends here on the island from Smithtown, Steve Linden, who wrote a book, Photobucks also, Everything You Need to Know About Car Collecting, he just recently went out and met with Jay Leno, did a segment of Leno's Garage, and he was going to help out with that, you know, with that court case as well, with some of the, because he's kind of an investigative reporter as well with old things like this. So.
Okay, what's his name?
Steve Linden.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's a collector. He's a collector and an appraiser. He does cars and motorcycles. You know what? I'll send you along his information too, because he's another local guy who we have on the show.
Yes,
great friend of ours. And actually, it was Steve who wrote that book. That's kind of what kicked off the whole thing with Motorbooks and finding publishers, and, you know, led to the trend that we're on now. So we really kind of owe it all to Steve.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. But, yeah, I totally understand when you say you can find a car, like, right under your nose. I actually found a 60 Lincoln Continental convertible on 41st Street and 9th Avenue in a parking garage right across from the bus terminal.
Who are you hiding from? Someone must have been chasing you.
You could go treasure hunting in New York City, but,
right,
you know, if you had a way to get into some of those apartment building garages, the old ladies had their cars parked in the 50s, and that's where they're sitting. They're probably perfect and low mileage.
You know, I got to tell you something, Tom. I was thinking about this last night, and I said, I'm going to talk to Tom. Man, the guy knows so many things. He's been through so many experiences, and what the hell do I know? What have I ever found? And like you said, my own cars can be considered garage finds to other people.
To me, it is.
Yeah, but I do know somebody. It hit me. I know somebody who has a house in the town I grew up in, and in a two-car garage on a fairly main road, I know because I've seen them, and I offered to buy this a few years ago, a 1937 810 Cord Beverly Coupe.
Oh, man.
Next to that is he's got a 27 Chevy that he owned in high school
behind that.
And this fellow's in his 60s. And next to that I think it's a late 50s Lincoln convertible with suicide doors, although I don't remember the exact year of it.
Wow.
I mean, those cars...
These cars now.
And they're all... And in front of the garage is another Lincoln convertible. There was another Lincoln convertible that I think it went back to the earth. I think he finally had to get rid of it.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I'm saying, yeah, I know where there's some garage finds.
Tom,
and,
you know,
it's unfortunate that these cars are not discovered until the person passes away.
Yeah.
And then they settle it through an estate and...
Right.
Yeah,
that's when it pops out.
I actually wanted that Cord because I had, there's a whole story. I had kind of like an out-of-body experience when I saw The Great Gatsby with Cords. Tell you the truth, I saw that movie back in 76, 77, and I'll tell you something, I knew things about the car, like the crank out, the lights and all.
Sure.
Before I saw the movie, there were things that I knew about.
Stick.
And I don't know where I knew that from.
I was going to say, and you can't remember a name or a place,
but you can
remember stuff like that.
I thought I was probably, you know, I probably lived in the 20s, but... I wanted to get that Cord, and we talked about it, and I said, God damn, if you gave me the car, if you sold it to me, where would I put it?
Yeah.
That's a long vehicle.
You betcha.
The coffin nose Cord.
Blow out the back of the garage for that.
Yeah.
Tom, we're going to take one more break. Can we keep you on?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay.
That's cool. Hold on 1 second. We're going to do this. Tom Cotter, the author of A Hemi in a Barn, Cobra in a Barn, and soon to be released, A Vincent in a Barn, all about motorcycle finds as well. Tom Cotter will be coming your way a little bit more. That's Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. More of Motormouth Radio right here. Keep it tuned.
The Motor Mouth will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Motor Mouth Radio on 90.3 FM WHPC.
You can't control everything, but there are some really important things you can control. Like keeping your family healthy and safe. Planning for a Healthy Life, a booklet from the American Diabetes Association, has information on everything from nutrition to retirement. To get your free copy, call 1-800-DIABETES or go to diabetes.org/lifeplanner. Order yours today and take control of your life from the American Diabetes Association, because we want everyone to be healthy and happy.
Your car not running right? Let the Motor Mouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio. We are taking those calls. Actually, we're not taking those calls because we're on with Tom Cotter.
Screw everybody else. We have an important guest. This is a lot more important.
Tom Cotter, author of Hemi in a Barn, Cobra in a Barn, Vincent in a Barn. What else have you done, Tom? What other books? You said you did a book on Holman Moody?
Yeah, I wrote a history of Holman Moody. When I moved here from Long Island, I discovered this huge brick factory building over near the airport. I said, what the heck is this? But I'm just riding around my new hometown, and I see on a big old gas tank outside, it said Holman and Moody. Oh, my God.
We know who they are.
Right, sure do.
You know, if this building could talk. So I started to write a book, and then business got in the way, and I put it aside, but it took me 17 years from the time I started to the time I finished. But that was a pretty cool experience. I got to meet, you know, Fred Lorenzen and Hutchison Dan Gurney. And,
wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to check that. I'm going to check that book out next. That's going to be another one.
It's out of print already, believe it or not.
Is it?
It's a gun.
Okay.
To find it on eBay.
Get in touch with Motor Books because I want them to republish it because it's a great book.
I will do that. I'll talk to our publicist friend and see what we can do. You know, one of the things that came up in the books that I got this through email this year or last year in 08. Seems like everybody sent it to me. In fact, I get links to it all the time. Was
Portugal.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I send this correctly. The De Pierre Auto Center, Don Schlag.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He got the Larry Fassett had bought that Don Schlag's collection.
That's in the Hemi in the Barn. Yeah, that's the greatest muscle car collection in the world. Yankos and all sorts.
Like I said, I got that email to me like 15 times. You know, it just kept coming around. But I didn't realize the breadth of what was actually in that collection. There was like 21 tractor trailers full of cars and parts, all original stuff.
Wow.
And he said now, I think the codicil was he found an even bigger collection that he was going to bid on. I can't imagine.
That's what he told me. I haven't heard about that, but one guy bought every single thing. A guy out of Philadelphia bought everything from that find, and he's just sitting on it.
Wow.
I'm not sure what That could be a lifetime career just selling that stuff on eBay, I guess.
Explain a little bit for the people who may not know what exactly, how that collection came to be.
Well, there was a kind of an eccentric guy whose family owned an implements business.
That's Don Schlag.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he, you know, I guess they owned maybe a Caterpillar dealer or John Deere dealer, something like that. And he was a car guy, and he would take off every wintertime, and he had a motor coach and go to California and buy out the inventory, the high-performance inventory at GM dealerships, and throw it in a trailer behind his motorhome and bring it back. And so he had all this NOS stuff, and I'm talking rare stuff, not only small-block fuel injection units for Chevys, but big-block fuel injection units for Chevys, which nobody's ever heard of.
Right, right.
Fuel injection units for Pontiacs and all weird stuff. And then he started during the gas crunch time in the 70s, he was taking, like, dealerships couldn't sell their big block Chevelles and the Corvettes, so he would take the big block Chevelle to his shop, he'd pull out the 454, he'd put in a 350, and he would keep the engine, and he'd charge, you know, a couple hundred bucks for his labor.
Imagine.
And he had all these NOS big block engines in inventory in the dealerships, and they could sell small block cars easier, and he was either a genius or he was crazy, but...
The thing that got me was he started to put the stuff in trailers, and people caught on to what he was doing and started hounding him. And when the trailer was full, he then would weld the thing closed, back another trailer up to it, to pretty much make it a sarcophagus, and start filling the new trailer.
Wow.
So he literally had parts that hadn't seen the light of day in many, many years. Oh, my gosh. You know, I tell a story on the show. My friend Kevin and I went to see a guy who, actually, he came to a car show that I do every year, I'm part of every year, and just started talking about Pontiacs, because we're all into GTOs, and he said he had parts for sale. So we went to where he works in Queens, Brooklyn border, and he had two containers. One of them had cars in it. I remember there was a 67 GTX. We didn't see the cars. 67 GTX, I think, oh, God, was it a Nova or a Camaro? And I forget what the third one was. They were entombed. The other one had nothing but engines and transmissions in it. Hmm. And Kevin and I bought each. I took home three Pontiac engines. He took an engine. We took heads. Also, and we knew the numbers. We did our research, so we took all the good stuff. This guy had all, you know, primo parts.
Wow.
We want to go see if he's still there and clean out that trailer.
Tom, I'm sure you
probably, my wife was happy.
Oh, I'm sure she was. Tom, you hear stories probably batting back and forth all day long, all night long, about people finding cars or, you know, the one that got away or whatever have you. Have you ever heard that great urban legend about the 53 Chevrolet that an old lady had her son, bought her son, he went to Korea, never came back, and that young guy that was looking for a cheap car went and took a look in the garage and saw that 53 Chevrolet with the cover over it, and he told her, he said, that's not a 53 Chevy, it's too low and too wide. And she said to him, you ever hear this story?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
And variants thereof, I would imagine.
Right,
I gotta tell you, you know, I grew up in Suffolk County and heard the story. Guy said, you know what's behind the headquarters of the police department? I said, what? He said, man, this guy had a Corvette, and he crashed into the woods off the parkway, and it was so thick that nobody saw him there for like a year. And suddenly they saw his car and dragged it out, and this guy was dead, and he was all, like, you know, all rotted up and stuff.
Yeah.
And so the exterior of the car was perfect, but the interior car was just totally horrible with rotted.
Oh, yeah, right.
So I actually went to the police department, Hop Hog, and asked the desk sergeant, I said, hey, I hear that you guys got a Corvette for sale real cheap, that a guy died inside, and he started to laugh. He said, I think I was like the third guy there that day.
Yeah. Well, but that's it. You know, you have to run down the leads. And it's like say...
The one you don't follow up is the one, the gold mine that you missed.
Tom, I got to tell you, Chris and I have a little mantra now on the show, and it's like with getting guys like you on the show, he said, hey, you know what? I'm going to ask Tom Cotter if he wants to come to be on the show. And you know what? If he says no, he says no. But if he does, if I don't ask, I don't know.
Right.
And sometimes...
I'll do this every week.
Well, come on down. We'll put you in. We have plenty of seats here.
Yeah, the next time you're in Long Island, we would love to have you in the studio. This would be awesome.
That'd be cool. Maybe I'll drive the Woody up or something.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. And I tell you, we'll hook up with Steve Linden. He's got a nice motorcycle collection of some eclectic stuff that's very collectible. And Steve knows how to beat the bushes around here, too. So yeah,
I want to give a plug to my brother. When I go up to Long Island, he owns Blue Point Brewing Company out of Patchogue. So anybody that's listening that drinks beer, try Blue Point Toasted Lager.
There you go.
Okay.
Excellent.
There you go. The big push.
Yeah, I got it to Patchogue once in a while. I'll have to remember that myself.
Yep.
So what's next, Tom? I mean, after the Vincent in the Barn, what's the next book, or what's the movie deal? Or,
I write books for a hobby. Like, my son and my wife will be watching TV at night, and I'm upstairs writing a book. So I've done two this year, and that gets hard. So I'm going to take a year off.
Oh, cool.
Writing books. I have a 32 Ford Highboy I want to build this year.
Nice.
I work for Mercedes-Benz as a consultant and do new car introductions. Around the country. So if Mercedes comes out with a new car, I put these big press events on where journalists come and drive the car and then write stories and put them on the cover of magazines, that kind of thing. And when I travel around the country for Mercedes, that's when I do a lot of my hunting.
Sure,
I get to go to, you know, Northern California or Phoenix or whatever
and
discover new territories. But I've got enough car stories now to do a Car in the Barn book. And maybe I'll do it this year.
I'd like to see the movie version. Do you ever get?
I've gotten a call from at least five production companies that want to take the Cobra in the Barn as a weekly show, like Roadshow.
Sure.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Oh man, you'll have two diehard viewers. That's for sure.
Yeah, and if
I thought I was the only guy that liked doing this stuff.
No.
You know, the Hemi in the Barn was the best selling car book in the United States in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That's great news. As part of your work with Mercedes, do you ever get up to you ever come to the car show at the Javits Center?
I haven't in a long time.
Okay. I was going to say,
I'm a consultant to Mercedes. I don't work for them.
Okay, so I got you.
You know, I work for them two or three times a year, and that pays the note here.
So if anybody wants to get a hold of the book or get a hold of you, Is there any way they can do so?
I'll give my cell phone number. I'll give my email address.
Okay. Yeah, the email address will probably work.
Tom Cotter, C-O-T-T-E-R, at C, as in Sam, X as in X-ray, CSX2490.com.
Sounds like a Cobra VIN number to me.
That's a chassis number for my Cobra.
Right. Very good. I learned something, you see.
Wow.
That's cool.
Tom, thank you so much. This was the fastest 45 minutes I think I've ever seen.
Well, listen, if you guys want to do it again, you know, I got that Dean Jeffries book coming out in February. You want to call me in March. I'm also the co-chairman of the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance in Florida.
Wow.
Talk about classic cars, you know, whatever sure. You want.
I will send you off this information that we talked about today. I'll get it together within a day or so, and I'll email it out to you, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
Tom, thank you. Thank you. A wealth of information. Tom Cotter, Hemi in a Barn, Cobra in a Barn, Vincent in a Barn, the story of Holman Moody.
Yeah.
Wow. And I think we just scratched the surface, I would assume, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Tom, take care. Thanks again. We'll keep in touch.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye. Tom.